Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, lady.
All right, ladies, the NFL draft is in the books. We waited for it for months, and then it feels like it happened so fast. Yeah. Although, Mia, when you're at the stadium that whole time or Miller Electric Center, it probably doesn't feel like it goes nearly as fast as it
does. I slept until 10 o'clock yesterday. I went to bed at 11:50 and overslept alarms today as well. So, yes, it comes back to bite you on the other side when you're in the same building for 30 of 64 hours. But, hey, listen, it's an honor and a privilege to bring you all information up to the minute and, of course, to cover the National Football League draft, especially for your Jacksonville Jaguars. And I am excited to hear what both of you ladies and RJ and so many of our listeners on the text line, brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures, as well as the MyBookie Digital Studio YouTube chat line. I can't wait to hear what you all thought of the Jaguars Hall this weekend.
Well, Taylor, I think there's two camps. Mm-hmm. There's the camp that is like me, that's optimistic, and every pick they can see something positive in. Mm-hmm. And then there's the camp that absolutely 100% thinks Trent Baalke is the worst general manager that's ever existed, should have been fired years ago, absolutely should not still be the general manager now. And so every single pick they're going to find flaws in. Do you agree that there's pretty much those two camps?
I would say there's a third.
Okay.
Because I'm in the third. I did not love the draft, but I didn't hate the draft. There's a lot of things that I've liked that Trent Baalke has done the last few years, not so much in the draft, more free agency for me. But there's picks in here that I like, and I know we'll go through what kind of happened, but ones that I'm like, okay, this one's decent, and there's other ones that I'm like, what in the world? Like in our group text, in our group chat for here, I just said he's the weirdest drafter I've ever seen. Like I don't completely understand his thought process, more of so of hate it. It's not the hate for me.
Well, and I think there are just so many people out there that no matter what he does, they're going to dislike it. But I think, yeah, if you look at it at each pick, and we'll start with Brian Thomas Jr. We talked about him on Friday, but certainly that's where the draft starts. And if you're going to talk about the best thing that Trent Baalke did, Mia, it's drafting the player that they would have taken at 17, being able to trade back to 23 and still take that player who had – he was second behind Rome Odunze as far as passes of at least 20 yards downfield last season. Mm-hmm. He had 12 touchdown catches on those passes of 20 yards or more. That's a guy that can stretch the field, and that is something that this team did not have. And so for me in the optimistic camp, I see Gabe Davis on one side. I see Brian Thomas Jr. on the other. Maybe Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't have the receptions this coming season because now teams have to focus more on the other guys, which is Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I think that the offseason for the Jaguars, or at the very least those last few weeks, proved to Doug Peterson that this was not the vertical passing attack that he wanted the Jaguars to be, and he has full-heartedly seized the game controller back from Press Taylor. Whether he's calling the plays or not, this offense will be designed by Doug Peterson, and it will be designed to be a vertical offense. They go out, they sign Gabe Davis, and they double down with the selection of Brian Thomas Jr., who, as I reported last week, was Doug Peterson's guy, was Trent Baalke's preferred pick. Even if there was some chatter of maybe some other coaches and personnel who wanted a different wide receiver, felt that maybe they could wait a little bit longer, this is who Doug wanted, because Doug saw the speed, in the words of Urban Meyer, and he saw that ability to extend the field and to also take the top off, that when you go back to Trevor Lawrence's Clemson tape, what did he have? Mm-hmm. I made the analogy on Friday at Players Grill, Taylor, that it's ironic that for a fan base and for a team that has been rumored to be, for a fan base that's been clamoring for trading for Brandon Ayuk, for trading for T. Higgins, to reunite him with Trevor Lawrence, mm-hmm. well, you went out and you got the love child between the two. Mm-hmm. And you have him on a relatively cheap rookie contract for the next 4 to 5 years. And so that's where I think it's a victory for those who champion Doug Peterson and what he hopes to bring back to this offense.
Yeah, and I think I like the Brian Thomas pick. We talked about this a lot on Friday, and I don't mind. That one is probably my favorite of of the picks that were made, just because I do think that not only is it one of the positions that I felt were the highest on what the Jags needed, but I also felt like the value was even, honestly, most teams had him going probably top 20. So to me, that value obviously is even better too. I think for maybe the people that don't love it, I think it's more of expectations were higher in certain aspects. And because I say that, when you're looking at T. Higgins and Brandon Ayuk and then trading up for Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers, their mind was there. Their mind was like, we could have one of these four guys, but we got this guy. And I don't want people to look at it like that, because I do think, I mean, Brian Thomas is one of the guys that, like you said, when we're looking at this offense, we're looking at an offense that worked for Trevor very well when it was vertical, when he had these guys to get downfield with. And now you do have a receiver who can do that, in addition to another deep threat in Gabe Davis. And then you also have his, like, security comfort in Christian Kirk, too. So I think you do have – it's hard when you hold yourself of, like, oh, we want this, this, and this, and then you get that fourth guy. But I don't think that to me is a negative whatsoever.
Yeah, I want to really hit that point home, too. I don't think that Brian Thomas Jr. is a consolation prize. Mm-hmm. Yes. The Jaguars did effort to get into the top 10 of the NFL draft. Yes, yeah. There was interest in Malik Nabers and Rome Odunze, who, by the way, told by more than one person, they had higher on their board than Marvin Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. There was an effort to get there. And look, I mean, I'm not going to try to blame the Atlanta Falcons again.
There was a lot of teams trying to get up there, by
correct.
The way.
Correct. And I can't blame I cannot fault Ryan Poles and the Chicago Bears, yeah. Because Ryan Poles said afterwards it was a 50-50 chance that either Odunze or Malik Nabers would be there at 9, because no one knew what the Atlanta Falcons were doing at 8. And mm-hmm. so when
and
teams.
They don't either.
Right, and they
even
don't either.
I like the pick.
Right.
They,
we'll,
yeah.
we'll get into that, I'm sure, throughout the course of the week.
Sense.
Right. But it's just so crazy. Like, it's honestly like draft day, the movie, but like. A plot line maybe for draft day 2, that so many teams were inquiring with the Atlanta Falcons about getting to 8 and saying, hey, we have the compensation and like this matches up, and the Falcons are like, no, it doesn't match. And if you're a general manager, you're like, well, I'm giving you like this year's second, next yeah. year's third. I'm giving you next year's first, this year's fourth.
Yeah.
Like we're doing a pick swap.
It was for a quarterback.
It was for a quarterback, which yeah. is when the trade value chart gets thrown out the window.
Yeah.
And that's what's just so like, That's where you cannot fault the Jaguars. You cannot fault the Jets, the Colts, any of those teams. And, you know, just a round of applause, RJ, for Taylor Dahl's Chicago Bears and the haul that they were able to bring back to Chi-Town. Because, look, the draft, the board, it fell their way.
Yeah.
And the Jags said, you know what? Not the end of the world. We'll go get the guy who, yes, those three were, quote unquote, at the very top.
Mm-hmm.
But then Brian Thomas Jr.
Just
was in that second
that.
Tier,
mm-hmm.
and then it was everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's I heard that from Daniel Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. I heard that from Dane Brugler. It was very much he's in tier 2 by himself, and then it's everyone else.
Mm-hmm. And just because of that, how people viewed it to this point, does not mean that that's going to be their production in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze are now automatic Hall of Famers because
yeah.
everybody had them as the top three, and, well, Brian Thomas Jr. is really just going to struggle, right? Like, that's not how it's going to go. It all depends on the situation and the environment that they're in, the play callers, all that stuff. Let me clarify the stat that I threw out earlier. And
oh,
by the way,
these
are from ESPN's Mike Duraco. Thomas had the actual most touchdown catches on passes of at least 20 yards downfield, the most in the nation. He was second as far as the catches, 10 touchdown catches on go or fade routes last season. That was the second most behind Rome Odunze. But mm-hmm. either way, that's something that certainly this team has been lacking. And when you have a guy with his speed and his size, you expect there to be, yes, a lot more explosive plays. That's what the NFL certainly wants. 20 yards or more, those explosive plays that we haven't seen here. But, of course, that goes back to, can your offensive line protect the quarterback in order yeah. for those guys to be able to run those routes?
Yes. Remember when I said the text line and the YouTube chat line at the MyBookie Digital Studio would be just
going crazy?
Just great places. Oh, they are fascinating right now. A lot of negativity. I think a lot of people are in that first camp that you referenced, Lauren, of Trent Baalke is the worst human being and he is the Antichrist and he will never anything good. Yeah, there are people in this town that believe that. Not me.
Let's keep it football only.
Love you, Trent. Let's get to this one because I think this is an interesting conversation and I heard several people make it over the weekend. This is from the 901 in Tennessee. At the end of the day, Thomas was the other guy at LSU. Got to be a little worried about that. To which I say, once upon a time on a 2019 national championship LSU team, there was a guy by the name of Justin Jefferson who by many regards was the other guy mm-hmm. to Ja'Marr Chase, despite being 2 years older than him. Was he not? Last I checked, Justin Jefferson getting picked at, what was it, 21st overall, 22nd overall? Worked out pretty well for the Minnesota Vikings, did it not?
Yeah.
Because he was, correct me if I'm wrong, am I revisionist history here, that he was the other guy because everyone was so enamored with Jamar Chase and said that if he had been able and eligible to come out after the 2019 season, he would have been a top five pick. He would have been picked ahead of Justin Jefferson.
Yeah. Which both of them seem to have worked out, by the way. So we can see, and that's what I think, because sometimes, and we don't know. We don't know what is going to end up happening. Like Lauren said, it comes to some of these guys, the ones going higher, are obviously going to worse teams also. So it's going to take a little more time maybe to see. The one thing with Brian Thomas, too, is I do think, number one, he's ready right away to play. That's why you're drafting him where you're drafting him. But he's also coming to a better team and a team that obviously has been working on. And sort of last year, we saw glimpses of what the offense can be. And now you feel like you've kind of fit all the puzzle pieces together to add to what Trevor Lawrence's strengths are. So to me, it's perfect. And we see all the time in college football and in the NFL, these guys, and sometimes those two guys, if one guy is that main guy, that's the one that teams kind of avoid or focus on, whatever that case may be. And people kind of are like, oh, well, he's the other guy. Well, that other guy had 17 touchdowns last season. So
yeah, he led the nation. That's one of the stats that when, you know, for weeks, months, really, when we talk about receivers, I liked him because of, yes, where the Jaguars could get him. And certainly being able to acquire draft capital and still get him, I think that was a great move. All right, let's get to the next pick. That would be LSU defensive tackle Mason Smith. Because of the injury history and because he had a lot of turnover as far as coaches in college, I think that's what scares people a lot. But when playing well, he can be a huge disruptor there in the middle of the defense. And everyone just obviously looks at LSU's defense overall last season and says, well, they were terrible against the run and they were a bad defense. And so, therefore, anyone that played on their defense isn't good. Mason Smith has some great traits. And I know people hate that word because they want productivity only. But sometimes you do draft a guy with traits and you realize that you can get a lot of potential out of him or make him reach his potential. Obviously, Ed Orgeron recruited Mason Smith, and then now you've got Ryan Nielsen, who's Ed Orgeron's protege here as a defensive coordinator, so he knows everything there is to know about Mason Smith.
Yeah, and I've heard from more than one person that, yes, the Matt House connection, and we're hopefully going to have Matt Mascana out of Baton Rouge, ESPN, on tomorrow, and he broke it down for us when he came on a week and a half ago, but I've seen a lot of LSU fans on the timeline who have been quick to say, like, you know, the gif of when Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson see Matt House walking into practice and they're giving him the side eye, as he will be the linebackers coach, not the defense coordinator here in Jacksonville. Like, look, I've talked to several people, and they believe this to be true. That LSU defense wasn't bad last season because of the personnel. They had too much talent on the field to be as bad as they were. And so that says to me that that has more to do with, were they put in the right position? Was there communication between the different defensive position groups? That says more about coaching to me, because you can't have this just assembly of five stars and quality four stars and transfers like Jordan Jefferson from West Virginia and not have success. And so that's why, you know, I just look at it. I look at the Mason Smith pick, and from what I've been told, Ryan Nielsen said, former five-star, former top five overall recruit, Ed's guy. Yeah, I could coach him. I could figure this out. And there's nothing wrong with that. People do it in the draft all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, as more than one person has noted on the text line and on my personal text line as well, because you guys are really enjoying this conversation. I need to get it sponsored. Mason Smith, if he goes back to school, he probably comes back a top 10 pick. And I am not going to call out one of my former co-hosts, but I will. Mason Smith, the day before the Florida State LSU game in New Orleans, so 2 years ago, the 2022 opener, a certain former co-host of mine said, Mason Smith is going to be a top 10 draft pick one day, and he's going to make a team really good. But now the pick is viewed as a flawed pick because he tore his ACL the next day after that. Last season, as he admitted to us on Friday night, he didn't feel fully healthy and back to himself until November. And because the Jaguars, as I've seen several of you send the numbers about, they reached and he should have been a late second, early third, not picked at number 48. He was there. I was told by multiple people other teams were trying to trade back in because they thought he would fall to the end of the second round and they would try to get him, and the Jaguars seized the opportunity. I do believe if they had been able to trade up for Kool-Aid McKinstry, that changes things. They weren't. New Orleans got their guy. I'm sure we will get into the Jaguars potentially looking into New Orleans' guy at cornerback at some point in today's program.
Yeah, this is one of the ones I do not love. I think that for me, I like his frame, his size, his movement. All of that are things that you talk about when you like him. But to me, for in the second round, it was a reach, especially when you have guys like Marshawn Nealand and Michael Hall and Ennis Rakestraw all still sitting on the boards when you make this pick. And that, for me, so many of the picks were not more so that I hate the pick. Like I said in the beginning, Trent Baalke just drafts so weird, and I can never fully understand the way his mind works when he's drafting, because to me, there was just so much talent still available that was sitting on the board. So that's why it feels like reaches, and at positional needs too. So that was just, it was just strange for me. I also do think, and yes, we know, like, the ACL is kind of what, like, started to knock ACL guy for Trent Baalke, go figure. But it also was, for me, because of the LSU situation, and I do think there was talent on that line. There was a guy, Mekhi Wingo, who ended up going way later, and I was surprised about, because to me, he was the best person on that defense. To me, Mason Smith was probably more like the third best guy on that defense, and they were all still available, and he went first. But it's interesting. I mean, obviously, they see something that they really like out of him and that they love. I'm hoping I'm wrong in this scenario. I know when I was doing, for example, my podcast on the LSU players, the guy that I was talking to kind of was just saying how much of a disaster the LSU defense was. And yes, a lot of it kind of came down more to coaching and them not being able to figure things out. But they were just saying there were so many issues, like midseason they brought a guy, Peter Jenkins, in to try and help this defense because these guys couldn't tackle. They couldn't figure out their form. They couldn't do all of these things. And it was Mason Smith was one of the ones that he said that they were working a lot with trying to get up to this next level. So you used a second round pick on a guy, to me, already kind of needs some work coming, you know, with an ACL injury too, but also is kind of a little bit of a project coming off a team too where he's had some really bad coaching. And to me, I felt like we saw regression because of that. So I'm hoping that being in this spot, being in Jacksonville with kind of what is going on defensively for them with Ryan Nielsen and some obviously being with familiar faces too helps him. I'm just seeing like it's going to take a little bit for us to see product out of him.
One quick note, Lauren. First off, Mason Smith had 3 defensive line coaches in 3 years. He pointed that out to us. This is right. The first time in his life that he actually will have a coach from the season prior heading into the next season with Matt House, even though he's the linebackers coach, but I digress. Several of you on the text line and the YouTube chat line have suggested that Mason Smith is just Ke'Lavon Chaisson.
Oh, goodness.
Allow for me to illuminate for you.
Two completely different positions, first of all.
So let's start with that. Ke'Lavon Chaisson, when he was drafted by the Jaguars in 2020, 6'3", 254 pounds, 32¼-inch arms. All right? You got those numbers in your head?
Yep.
Mason Smith is 6'5", 306 pounds. He told us he's trying to get to 315, 35-inch arms. Plays inside. Will play 3-tech, 5-tech.
He's a defensive tackle.
He certainly can line up, and I've seen some tape from his freshman season at LSU circulating. You certainly could line him up out wide, and he could rush the passer from there. But Ke'Lavon Chaisson, at the end of the day, was a tweener project that after Yannick Ngakoue had requested a trade and the franchise – or not the franchise tag. Yes, franchise tag had him at the time of the April 2020 draft. Quite literally, it was, all right, how are we going to replace Yan? I know. Let's take this project at 20, who is a tweener but appears to be young and his best football could be ahead of him. Maybe he's a little questionable against the run, but he's undersized, but it could give us a different sort of fastball against Josh Allen. Quite literally, that was why he was drafted. Mason Smith is not a fastball. He is a bull in a china shop. Mm-hmm. And the sooner you recognize that, the more you will understand why this pick was selected, because so many of you are the same fans and the same viewers and the same listeners who clamored about the Jaguars not having a pass rush from the interior. Once Devon Hamilton went down with an injury, an illness that can never be faulted for that, first and foremost, It was, well, why can't we get any push from the interior? There were several moves made in the NFL draft and several moves that Trent Baalke made in free agency this offseason to answer that question that so many of you had throughout the course of the 2023 season. And now you're mad.
Because that's to my point to start the show, they're always going to be mad as long as he's the one making the selections. But if you dig deeper into each player, and that's what I know we have done for the past few days, is when healthy, like I said, he can be so good as far as QB pressures. He had the second most in the entire SEC, which, oh, by the way, is a pretty good brand of football. He had 20 quarterback pressures with lining up as a defensive tackle last season, which was the second most in all of the SEC. So you have to, yes, you have to look for sometimes the positive when if all you see is the fact that the LSU defense was terrible. You have to dig a little deeper than that. The Caleb on Chase in comparison to me is just laughable. Like, if you really think that those two are on the same path, then I feel like you just don't watch football because, again, Mason Smith, oh, by the way, is now going to be probably not a starter on this football team because you went and got Eric Armstead.
Which is why people don't like that it was the second round pick.
And I understand that, yeah. But you, in football, you know someone's going to get injured at some point in time, yeah. And so you have to have a guy that's ready that you believe will be your starter for years to come. What if Eric Armstead comes here? He wasn't particularly super 100% healthy when he got here. What if he has some sort of injury? Now you just go, oh, well, there went our passers up the middle.
Or what if this? We're done. What if he is good this year at age 30, but, you know, he's going to be 31 the next year he's under contract. Sure. He's going to be 32 the next year he's under contract. Now you have a guy who not only could play next to him this year, but could be waiting in the wings behind him as well in the years to come.
Yeah. And I just think people don't like it at two. That's kind of where I sit with it because it's just when you want, especially in a draft where everything fell off so massively at like round four, you wanted guys that you know you were going to see on the football field, especially after last year when pretty much Anton's the only one that really made any sort of impact whatsoever coming out of that draft. So they were, I think, hoping, especially looking at you're coming in, most people had corner as the most needed position, and then you waited until the round three, and then for a lot of people got a guy too when there were still other corners on the board. So I think it's more so that maybe people wouldn't hate these picks if it wasn't made when it was over certain other players and things like that. And that's when it's just kind of the, when we talk about draft, like we're so invested into the draft nowadays with all the mock drafts that people can do and all the scouting reports we get and everything. So people do get so deeply into, okay, well, there's five other players that could have been selected at this point that are, would have been starters or could more likely be starters sooner. And so that's where the mindset of people, maybe if it was round three or four, people would be like, okay, this, you know, this is good. If they would have gotten one of those top corners in, you know, the first two rounds, it probably would have been a different conversation.
And I go back to, for all of those people who did mock drafts, did you have Puka Nacua going as late as he did a season ago?
I mean, there's always
in the draft ago, right? Like,
if Bucky was finding those hidden gems the last couple of years, maybe it'd be different too, but he hasn't.
And right, everyone wants to hold Tank Bigsby, Britton Strange, and Tank Bigsby against Trent Baalke, and I can understand that pushback.
Yeah.
They did not have productive seasons, and that trajectory has to change in order for those picks to be worth what they are. But he also found Antonio Johnson, who might be an incredible starter on the football team. So that's where you just, again, I'm always going to look at it optimistically because I want the team to succeed.
Yeah.
And it's way more fun to talk about wins.
Yeah,
as I always note, we started Helmets and Heels in August of 2014.
People just have to be realistic because, like, also we've been let down so much, I feel like. They feel like in the city. And so many years and so many drafts afterwards, we're sitting there being like, heck yeah, that was awesome. We're winning 10 games this year, and then it didn't happen. So now I think people are a little more cautious about certain things. And so there's obviously the extreme on each side. There's the full-on homers that are like, nothing they do can go wrong. And then there's the ones that are like, everything Trent Baalke touches is – dies, and it's like there truly are these people, and there's somewhere in the middle that is has been correct the last couple years, and somewhere in the middle of realistically which of these draft picks are going to work and which aren't.
Yeah, we've had two playoff seasons since 2014 when this show originally started. Two.
So there's a lot more
times when we were talking about the first overall draft pick or the seventh overall draft pick, all that kind of stuff. All right, I want to get to Jerrion Jones, the FSU cornerback who the Jaguars drafted in the third round when we return. And we will also talk about the AFC South and all other things NFL draft, Jarvis Landry in the news. We'll get to all of that when we return. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
Told me names, girl, where you from?
This kind of sounds like Morgan Wallen, doesn't it?
I truly thought it was for the first, like, three times I heard it.
So I heard this song for the first time a few months ago. This artist is named Red Farin. I don't know his actual name, but that's his artist name. Red, F-E-R-R-I-N. And I now listen to a ton of his music. I think he's really good. This would be the first song, Jack and Diet Coke, that I ever heard. But he's got another few that I think if you like Morgan Wallen, you'd like this guy.
Yeah.
And of course, you can support other country artists since not everyone wants to support Morgan Wallen these days. All right, today is a Big Chief Tire Monday. The local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust whenever I have automotive needs. I go to see my friends at Big Chief Tire. I go to the location on Phillips Highway, but they have 5 locations around town. You can find out more at BigChiefTire.com. All right, we've talked about wide receiver Brian Thomas Jr. We talked about Mason Smith. Oh, and real quick on Mason Smith, I loved the story of why he has the 2 A's in his first name.
Oh, yeah.
Because his dad did not like the coworker of his mom's that was naming the dad. He didn't like the dad of the son, and they were naming that kid Mason, which, of course, I would be like, so why didn't you just change to a different name? Like, no. Why did it still have to be Mason? But I guess his mom was locked in on Mason.
Without naming names, there may have been a reporter in the Jags media room who said, well, that's actually why I have my name. Similar situation. So I won't I won't reveal who that reporter was. But
fascinating.
I said, hey, listen, it happens. It happens to people. And now you have a unique name that, you know, we can have a lot of fun with, you know, 2 times the fun, double the A. I don't know. We come up with something like that.
All right, so let's get to FSU cornerback Jerrion Jones. And again,
well, before we do that, Lauren, I do, you know, I led the show by saying that today is Reaction Monday. It's just like after a win or after a Jaguars loss. I've seen over 200 people watching. Round of applause for that, RJ, at the MyBookie Digital Studio during the drill, during Jaguars Today. You guys have been locked in. You want the fallout, you want the grades, the reaction to the Jaguars draft class and all the other 31 teams in the National Football League. I think that that's why this needs to be an interactive show, and that's why we're going to be listening and reading some of your comments on the YouTube chat line and on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. And Lauren, you have been challenged. So before we get to the Jags' 3rd round pick,
all right,
on the YouTube chat line, why did they draft a bench guy for a 2nd round pick? Lauren, you liked Taven Bryan in the 1st round. Don't act like you know about Mason Smith.
I absolutely did not like Taven Bryan.
Just because he went for 3 years.
Correct. Just because he went to Florida does not mean that I was supportive of the pick. I also didn't love the Dante Fowler Jr. pick because I also watched him.
Sometimes that helps, honestly, when you watch so much of like, the school that you watch and other people will have a high grade and you're kind of like,
So for instance, a year ago, everyone, when they did their way too early mock drafts, had Jason Marshall in the 1st round, mm-hmm. the Florida corner. And if you watched any of the draft coverage this weekend, you saw Jason Marshall quite often mm-hmm. because it was showing the opposing teams attacking him.
Yeah.
And he did not have a good season. Highlights. Right. And so a year from now, we'll talk about him again and he'll be drafted, I'm sure. But assuming he has a good season. But yeah, watching him closely, I would have said never draft a guy like that.
Yeah.
Ricky Pearsall would have said all day draft him if the Jaguars had a need at slot receiver. That is not a position of need in the moment because they already have, obviously, Christian Kirk and then Parker Washington. But I still like Ricky Pearsall, and maybe he'll play some outside. But, yeah, I can tell you, as of right now, I did not like the Taven Bryan pick. I'm sure there's lots that I've been wrong on. In fact, this is not a Florida guy, but I wanted Laviska Shenault so bad because I read the article that he wrote in the Players Tribune mm-hmm. and how tough he was and how hard he worked. And I watched his film, and I thought, this guy is going to be fantastic as a 2nd-round pick. And obviously, he did not work out here. So there, why did they draft a bench guy? He's a bench guy as of now, but you don't know what can happen.
I also don't foresee him being on the bench all that much,
no,
by the way, in
2024. No, you constantly rotate defensive linemen.
And that was my biggest critique coming out of this draft along the edge. I think you're in a better position today in terms of your depth at edge rusher than you were a year ago when you completely ignored the position, because I do think signing Travis Gibson and signing a project in Miles Cole late and, you know, depending on what Yasir Abdullah ends up playing, if he is on the edge or if he ends up being more of a Sam linebacker, depending on what Devin Lloyd becomes. So I think your depth is better there. But I just can't get past what Josh Allen said. He was on the Bleacher Report's live draft party broadcast, and it's something we've talked about on the air. It's something I know he's talked about, that if you're an offense and on 3rd and 8, you have Trayvon and Josh on the edge, and you have Arik Armstead and Mason Smith, he verbatim said, and Mason Smith inside, you're to tell me that you as an offense are like, oh, yeah, we got this. Yeah, this is fine. You have 4... I mean, let's be real. You have 4 monstars that you're literally lining up against. And he referenced Mason Smith as being on the inside. And again, he's not the coach. He's not the one calling the plays and who plays or not. But I thought it was interesting that Josh specifically said, I believe that you could play Armstead and Mason Smith both on the field at the same time.
I think you had Ryan Nielsen saying here's also what I want. And I think he's been a part of the conversation. And he knew all about Mason Smith because of his coaching connections. And I think he felt like this is a guy that he needed to have. And then that's when we'll get to the FSU cornerback, Jerrion Jones. By the way, Mike DiRocco did a great job as far as putting out ESPN stats and info stats for a lot of the Jaguars guys. So here's one that I love for Jerrion Jones. He didn't allow a touchdown in 436 coverage snaps over the last two seasons at FSU. He allowed the 10th lowest completion rate and 7th lowest QBR as a targeted defender among FBS players with at least 30 targets. But basically, like I said, go back to didn't allow a touchdown in 436 coverage snaps. We're talking about a guy who was on an elite defense, so the knocks against LSU defense, like we said, we understand. But FSU had an elite defense, and this guy was their nickel corner. And the Jaguars, as we all know, needed another nickel corner. It's for competition, for depth, and maybe he certainly beats out the other guys that are slated to start there.
Yeah, and I saw a couple Florida State fans who tweeted at me that he made, I believe it was 31, 36, something like that, straight starts, never missed a game.
And he loves it here. That's the other
thing. Right, and he grew up a Jags fan. So, I mean, that's obviously a feather in your cap as well. Trent Baalke on the call with Jerrion Jones that they released through Jaguars.com, you know, he referenced to him a meeting they had in his office. And so I don't expect him to be a player that, like, hey, they just did their intel through other channels. Like, he's been in the building. He came for a local day. Like, he visited with not only the coaching staff, but with the front office. Mm-hmm. And so they did their intel on him. Yes. Can you criticize the Jaguars for taking a nickel before a perimeter corner? Sure. But if he's the best player available and he's the best corner available, Trent Baalke believes he has inside outside versatility, even though Doug Peterson did concede to me that yes, he will be starting at nickel. But I he's a good player. And another thing that Doug has spoken so highly of, and I know multiple coaches down at the Miller Electric Center would echo this, the National Football League is trending towards a world in which you are in dime nickel quarters almost 80% of the time. You're not in base. You don't only have two cornerbacks on the field ever at this juncture in the National Football League's history. You need to load up on the secondary. There are guys that maybe they play exclusively nickel. I mean, look at Mike Samristrell for Washington, that are getting drafted higher today than they would 4 or 5 years ago just because the league is trending towards 7-on-7. It's that simple. And if he's a good football player and you don't have to worry about that position now for the next 5 to 6 years, is it an upgrade over Trey Herndon, who was admirable in his 4 to 5 years but was more of a zone corner here in Jacksonville and maybe not
wasn't fast enough.
Right, and not as athletically gifted as a guy who ran a 4.3 at the combine? I say yes.
Yeah, this I don't mind Jerrion Jones. I would have personally liked a TJ Tampa, maybe even a Cam Hart over him. But Florida State, like you mentioned, Lauren, their defense was really good last year. And outside of Renardo Green, he's the guy that you talked about in that backfield. So I think that I was waiting. I was like, if there's not a corner right here, I'm probably going to lose my mind. So I'm glad that I ended up at least taking one right here just because, like,
you weren't the only one.
Oh, my gosh. I was like, oh, they have to. There's no way. But yeah, so this is one of the ones that I actually, and I know on a lot of people more so had this as one of the lower grades. Like when I was seeing a lot of the grades, this was more of like a CC minus for a lot of people. This one for me, I kind of liked a little bit better than some of the other ones. I do like the fit. I know that we've talked a ton about, they brought Darnell Savage in here and how he could also kind of be play in that nickel spot too. So it'll be interesting what they do, but I the reason that this works for me is I do think that having that competition at that position rather than having to hope that Darnell Savage or you can find someone else, and I think that bringing him in gives that little bit of edge and the opportunity for one of these guys to beat each other out and kind of make it their spot.
It was criticized because Taylor, the consensus board, the consensus board says it was a reach.
And I mean, and it, technically it was a little bit, but not a big one for this one. Like I think it was the tail end of two. You got him, and he was projected in the third round,
right.
So it's not like some massive reach that statistically, to me, Mason Smith was.
Statistically speaking, the biggest reach of the first three rounds of the NFL draft was another Florida State corner in Renardo Green. You want to know who picked him? Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. Last I checked, none of you are questioning the moves the 49ers have made over the last 4 to 5 years in the NFL draft. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. And Trey Lance.
Well, they have
That's true. Well,
they
so,
have
well,
product. They have product to show out of it.
Right. Yeah. And look, I think that for me, and I tweeted this, I said this, if Kyle Shanahan's going to take Renardo Green with the last pick of the second round and say, look, he fits us, he's a good football player, and we need a guy like him, and we don't pick again until X, Y, and Z time, so we're just going to take him now, And if Renardo Green was a projected third round pick, and that's why people are crushing the Niners because he was selected in the second round, mm-hmm. and Jarian Jones was a predicted third, fourth round pick mm-hmm. because he was the nickel to Renardo's outside corner, then that says to me, if Kyle Shanahan was this high on the Noles defense, number one, maybe the rest of us should have been. And number two, that it's totally okay to pick him at 96, the fourth to last pick on day two of the NFL draft.
Yeah. And this was a comp pick too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
From Juwan. And yeah. So guess what?
Wait,
you let Juwan walk.
A Jaren for a Juwan.
For eight. Correct. Yes, exactly. You let Juwan walk. $80 million that you didn't have to pay him. You replaced him with Anton Harrison last year. Mm-hmm. And now you have your nickel corner too.
Yep.
And Juwan's way overpaid because he was paid to be a left tackle, but he actually is the right tackle.
Which I feel like we all said that, but it's fine.
We did, because that's exactly what he was here. And he loves to false start, which we like to point out. All right, when we come back, we will look at around the AFC South and a whole lot more draft-wise. You're listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels. Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010 XL.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels. It's a Big Chief Tire Monday. Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. We are talking all things NFL draft with you, as you'd expect. All right, as far as the AFC South is concerned, I am a little afraid of the Colts draft.
Afraid?
Yes, because I thought Adonai Mitchell might come here, and I think he's a really good receiver, and so I'm a little concerned about him. And if Latu is healthy and he's a really good pass rusher in the NFL, that concerns me as well.
I got a text right after I'm going to pull it up. I got a text.
You're going to calm me down
yeah,
over here?
I got a text as soon as he got taken.
I have seen a lot of the people, they'll be like, hey, the best drafts, and mm-hmm. they'll have like four or five teams, and the Colts is on like every list I've seen.
Yeah, that's not surprising to me.
Yeah.
I got a text when I asked a scout, what do you think mm-hmm. of the pick? Someone within the Jaguars organization. We are going to bleep him up. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's for Adonai Mitchell?
No, for Latu.
For Latu, okay.
And that is someone who also has familiarity with the Pac-12. And so, you know, is very familiar with the fact that Latu started at one Pac-12 institution, was not able to get medically cleared, and was forced to medically retire, and then found another Pac-12 institution, who will be a Big Ten institution soon enough, both of them actually, and then moved to Southern California and was able to thrive. For me, and again, I'm no doctor, I'm not going to tell you exactly what the prognosis will be for him long term, but the comparison I keep seeing is to Leighton Vander Esch, who just had to medically retire 5 years into his NFL career. And now I don't see anybody judging, well, I know in Dallas they are, judging the Cowboys for the fact that they spent premium capital on a guy who they knew had neck issues, knew had injury history, and now he's no longer in the league 5 years later, 6 years later. And so, look, I wish the best for the kid, but, you know.
Just not against the Jags.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And look, they did have a nice haul. It was a very Chris Ballard draft. Chris Ballard going after reporters and cussing
away. I loved
away.
That. And, not so much the cussing,
yeah.
Because, I mean, you have kids watching, but definitely being able to stand up for the character of Adonai Mitchell mm-hmm. against unnamed sources, right, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. That part I absolutely love.
Yeah. Chris Ballard is just a fascinating individual. I don't know him
he
personally.
He works with Jim Irsay.
Yeah, I know.
Works
exactly.
For
you have to be. Exactly. I mean, hey, listen, I applaud standing up for what you believe in. But if he was that high on your board, why didn't you go up to go get him? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you picked him at 52nd overall.
Well, he's happy that that's where he fell.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And he's not going to attack those people and stand up for the character until after they're able
right.
to select him.
Exactly.
Obviously.
The irony was not lost on me that the 79th pick that the Jaguars initially owned, that was traded to the Atlanta Falcons, then traded to the Arizona Cardinals, and then ultimately landed in the lap of the Indianapolis Colts, is Matt Goncalves, a guy mm-hmm. who I know the Jaguars staff was high on. Now the question, and what the Colts are perhaps getting dinged on, is where is he going to play? He's not going to play this year, presuming that they're tackles are both back, and knowing he's coming off of a toe injury. But I think he's a good player. He has inside-outside versatility. I know the Jaguars would have really liked that at 96 overall. Tanner Bordellini out of Wisconsin, perhaps the most athletic interior offensive lineman who's ever been at the combine. Another guy who was high on the Jags board.
Sounds like a pasta to me.
Yeah, exactly. And he's from Wisconsin. I'm like,
it does sound like
not that many Italians.
It sounds like they looked at the Jags draft board and
right, at least along the offensive line. Right, at least along the offensive line, and knowing that A.D. Mitchell, you know, I don't know if he was a target of the Jags or not, but yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, Chris Ballard has a track record of going out and finding guys with really high raw athletic scores, relative athletic scores. Yeah. And that's what he did again. I remember coming off of the 2023 draft a year ago this time and being more concerned after last year's haul than I am after this year's haul. And so that's what gives me kind of pause to be like, last year we looked at the fact that they came away with Anthony Richardson, Juju Brents, Josh Downs, the tackle who now is playing, I'm blanking on the kid's name, and I was like, oh, dang, they're loading up right now. I came away from this one saying...
Blake Freeland,
BYU. Yeah. I came away from this one saying, look, there's some good names, some good football players there, but they still have holes as well, and they had to keep throwing darts at the secondary because outside of Kenny Moore... They still don't know what they have in Brents because he was hurt much of last season. Opposite starting him last year was either a seventh-round pick or a former undrafted free agent. And so at the same time, as much as, yes, they got some good players in the building, so did the Jags, so did 30 other teams. And so we'll see. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, as I've listened to a lot of national analysts, specifically looking at those three other teams in the AFC South.
All right, we do have some Jaguars news. I suppose it was more news on Saturday, but we'll break it down on the other side as far as the Jaguars have officially announced that they will exercise the fifth-year option for both Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback, and Travis Etienne, the running backs. We'll get to that and continue to talk draft right here on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL on 2.5 FM.
It's a Helmets and Heels Big Chief Tire Monday.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010 XL.
By the way, the week of Luke Combs has arrived.
Luke Combs performs on Friday and Saturday.
Yes, Everbank Stadium. Very excited. This is an Eagles song called Seven Bridges Road that the Wild Are Blue, one of the opening acts on Friday, and Luke Combs did together. It's a fantastic song with great melodies, and so I'm hoping and assuming that the Wild Are Blue will have Luke Combs come out during their part. I think they'll be the second act on Friday, and I'm hoping they sing this together. If they don't, I'm going to be very disappointed, which is no way to start the week. All right, so the Jaguars did just officially announce that they will exercise the fifth-year option for both Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne. That does not mean that they will not get a deal done. I hate to use double negatives, so let me rephrase. The Jaguars still can get a deal done with Trevor Lawrence or with Travis Etienne, certainly more so Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback. It just means that right now they had the option to pick them up, and they did.
Correct, and it's significant, and I mentioned this actually in our promo meeting this morning behind the scenes here at 1010XL. It was significant that when Mike DiRocco asked, and there were a couple of us like waiting to like, do we ask, do we not ask, that Trent Baalke like almost was joking about it. He was like, I think I'm going to get a beer first before I decide. And he's like, no, we're exercising both. And I think that was very refreshing because 2 years ago at the pre-draft availability,
you got nothing.
We got nothing on Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Josh Allen, who, again, had made a Pro Bowl as a rookie and certainly had an up and down next two seasons. But the fact that we got nothing, like to the point that Trent was like, we won't be speaking about that today. We're here to talk about the draft. And, you know, lo and behold, they also were selecting Trayvon Walker first overall 4 days later. That's what I found refreshing and fascinating because it was no brainer. Yes, we're picking up the option on both of them. The reports, of course, don't lie that they have been in conversations with Trevor's camp about an extension. And the bottom line doesn't lie either, that for Travis Etienne to be extended for a fifth year for $6 million, and I understand the value of a running back has declined, and it'll be curious to see what his long-term future is in Jacksonville, that's a slam dunk. I mean, that's an easy just boop, in my opinion. I mean, $6 million is, you know, it's a drop in the barrel when you consider that he is when he is healthy and at his peak, he's a top 10 running back in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I like it too, and it was something I mentioned a couple weeks ago, of just how in general, and I know this isn't something specifically that we may see ETN doing, but I've talked to a lot of people who talk about the new kickoff rules and how it may be geared towards a lot of running backs being better at the return now, just because they're the guys that are used to running in crowded spaces with people, and it's kind of more of that situation now. So that's why I think we saw so many, like last year, no running backs were getting money, and this year we saw a ton of running backs getting money. So I think to be able to get a deal done like this when the Jags can, and I think last year a lot of the reasoning, and I think a lot of people will point to the offensive line more so than Travis Etienne, because obviously he's just one of those guys that to me I think has everything you want out of a running back. And so I would love to see that part of the game get kind of reinvented this year, because we lost it so much last year, where it was games where he'd have 6 carries and games where he'd have 24, and there was just no real fluidity of what they were doing in the run game. So I'd like to see that back, because that just opens so many other things too.
It certainly does. I'm glad you brought up special teams. We didn't get to every single draft pick that the Jaguars had. They made a lot. But running back Keelan Robinson out of Texas certainly will be a guy that, outside of Devin Duvernay, I would expect to be the kick returner.
Also connects that then, and with the running back being like the
exactly.
new guys for this.
Yep. And then the Jaguars did select a kicker in Arkansas kicker Cam Little, who, I think he's already a fan favorite.
I'm telling you. Did you watch it? Did you guys watch the availability?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I need to link it and send it back out into the ether, because Mark Long has been covering the Jaguars since 2000, and I thought that I was just being biased in my 6-7 years covering the team. And he was like, no, in 24 years of covering this team, that was the greatest availability we've ever done right after someone has been drafted. This dude is electric. I almost if they're listening right now, I almost texted Logan and Ross, and I was like, buckle up, because this kid, the energy is infectious. The Mo Bryan is strong in him, some might say, or in my estimation, Heath Farwell and this young man went to dinner somewhere in Northwest Arkansas, and I would have paid big money to have been a fly on the wall or to be their waiter, because it would be a fascinating, fascinating dinner conversation. It sure was. And he ultimately was the guy the Jaguars had targeted. And now that we hear from him, and again, it's only over a Zoom, we'll see how he looks on the field. It makes sense, because when you think about, in terms of, obviously kickoffs, having a strong leg, that's the reason they parted ways with Matthew Wright, Riley Patterson once upon a time, even though Riley's back in Jacksonville now, for now. He's hitting it at the combine from the logo. He was the only one of the three that was repeatedly making it from 60-plus. And I understand that's not in a game action, but still, he can hit it from 60, and it looks like it's good from 65. Mm-hmm. He doesn't turn 21 until August.
Yeah, youngest kicker ever drafted at age 20.
I can tell you this, Doug and Trent and everybody down there, they take a lot of pride in getting young guys who their best football is still ahead of them. Doug verbatim said it to me after Anton was drafted. And so that's where I'm like, he checks another box there.
Yeah.
High character kid. Got to speak with him about all the great work he does for the Down syndrome group for Northwest Arkansas, because his cousin actually has Down syndrome and he feels it very important to give back to his community. And look, you have Joey Sly, you have Riley Patterson on the roster, but this has been a revolving door since Josh Lambeau got hurt in 2020. And it's very clear to me that Trent Baalke and company said to Heath Farwell, you need to identify your guy. And they went out and they found their guy.
Yeah. But real quick, Taylor, 82.8% of his attempts in his 3-year career at Arkansas. Obviously, everyone knows he beat Florida with his kick. And he never missed a PAT.
Wow.
129 for 129. That, to me, it's that second part that shows the confidence. Because a point after attempt is not about whether or not you've got the leg. It's a very short
field
goal.
That's in the moments of the big moments when you're like, this is for the win.
Right. And so to never miss, that shows his confidence, which is what Mia just talked about on the Zoom. We certainly saw that.
Yeah, and I think when you go back to the history of the Jags too, we've talked about it a little bit of how the Jags got pretty lucky from a Mike Hollis to a Scobie to a Lambeau.
Yes.
And then like you said, Mia, you go to this revolving door of guys lately where there were little glimpses where maybe you thought it was a guy and it would be one who had a leg but didn't have quite the accuracy, or you'd have one who was super accurate but didn't quite have the leg. And there's just too many, you need one of those kickers that has it all, because nowadays you see some teams getting and they're like, all right, just get to the 50 pretty much and we'll start thinking about a kick. And so you want to be able to have that confidence, especially in games games when it's going to happen, when your offense just isn't quite clicking sometimes, and to have a kicker that you know you can throw out there and he's going to make it, has the confidence to make it in big situations, it's such a big part of this game.
And I thought that's what Brandon McManus would be for this team. I was super excited about him when the Jaguars got him from the Broncos after Sean Payton just basically let him walk. But he didn't amount to be that. And even though he had won a Super Bowl with that team, and I thought, yeah, he had the combination that we need, the accuracy and being able to kick a 60-yarder if need be, because that helps your offense so much. Yeah. You don't have to necessarily go for it on fourth down. Obviously, that wasn't the case. And so now, yeah, Cam Little comes in and will compete for that starting kicking position. Speaking of special teams, also, Taylor, the Bears selected a punter.
Yes.
And this
Speaking of reaches, Beck, Taylor and I disagree with the consensus board. It was not a reach.
Yeah. This is the most Taylor Mia pick of the entire NFL draft, and it would be one Iowa punter, Torrey Taylor, now selected by the Bears. And you, even though you already got a Rome Odunze jersey, now you're also going to get a Torrey Taylor jersey.
Yeah, I think I might get a Torrey Taylor jersey. And I was telling, more so because, first of all, cool, I love it, but it's Taylor. So I was like, it kind of fits, because if for whatever reason it doesn't end up being anything crazy to this guy, I was like, I truly think he'll end up getting like a standing ovation the first game, because there's so many Iowa fans in Chicago too, because it's right there. And so I was like, I can just see it happening. But also the Bears punting team was so bad last year. I feel kind of bad because the guy's great. His name is Trent Gill. We drafted him a couple years ago. That didn't work out. But the Bears had the worst punt team, like when it comes to average. Torrey Taylor averages 10 more yards per punt than Trenton Gill did the last two seasons, and I was like, it's just gonna him being able to flip the field. I also wouldn't be surprised if they throw him in for some kickoffs, because now with the new kickoff, I feel like you're going to want a bigger kicker back there, and so I do think you'll see him out there too. But it was just funny because a lot of people did say he was more they saw him going in the fifth round, and obviously the Bears got him in the fourth round, so it was a little high. But to me, it also just is like Ryan Poles said, and his mind must think he's close.
And also, like, the same reason when people love you, Gus, but our friend Gus Lowe, were criticizing selecting a kicker in the sixth, you have to understand that if, yes, do they hit? Do they actually win the job? Sure, you can say that about Torrey Taylor as well. But if he hits, and if he becomes what we believe he's going to be, just like what we believe Cam Little's going to be, you just drafted a starter on day three.
Yeah. And
what's the problem there?
And someone that's going to be there for like 15 years. Like, that's the thing with kickers and punters too.
Then what's if it hits, then what's the problem? And I understand you could say that for every draft pick, but especially for the specialists, because you can't guarantee, especially if you want one of this top tier, right? So like with the kickers, there was the three of them. It was Reichard out of Alabama, Cardi out of Stanford, and then Cam Little. If you don't get one of them, sure, you may end up with a Harrison Meavis or one of those other kickers. If you don't select Torrey Taylor, there's other punters to be had. But you're not getting one of them once.
Yeah.
And that's why I give Ryan Poles all the credit in the world. He knew he only had one draft pick. He ended up getting one more because he traded back in and said, I need to solve this problem once and for all.
We texted each other like at the same time, just like, Torrey Taylor.
I literally stood up like in the media room and was like, Taylor! And everyone's like, Mia's got. I'm like, no, I need to call Taylor Dahl right now.
By the way, Jarvis Landry will attend the Jaguars rookie mini camp. I find that interesting.
Me too. I think that I'm interested to see. Obviously, we saw little clips of the video. He looks healthy. He set out last year. It's what most people, he didn't sign with the team last year, and most people are assuming that's because he wanted to get back to 100%. He obviously got hurt in 2022, had that ankle injury late. And so for him, I felt like maybe in his mind, like rather than rushing back, let me take a year off, get 100%, know my body's where I want my body to be. Because when the year before, the 2 years previous to that, he had 570 yards, 2 touchdowns, 840, and 3 touchdowns. But let's also just point to Cleveland in general with the quarterbacks the last few years with Deshaun Watson and everything. There was a lot of questions, and then injury with Deshaun. So we'll see with that. But the year before that, he had over 1,100 yards, 6 touchdowns. Jarvis has just been one of those guys that I think when he's on, he's on. And so that's why it's interesting to me. It will be interesting to see how healthy he is.
Yeah, certainly. By the way, he is 31, so certainly that's older. Mike Evans, and I'm not saying Jarvis Landry is Mike Evans, but Mike Evans is 30 years old. Calvin Ridley is 29, going to be 30 soon. Like, that, you can have an older receiver that still is productive.
Yeah, like, I don't know. When I first saw the news, you think of the Jaguars wide receiver depth, and you're like, okay, where is he going? He's probably not making this team.
Yeah.
But should be noted, and again, these are different iterations of the Jaguars. Jacob Harris, shout out to our Knights of UCF, once upon a time made the Jaguars 90-man roster and then their practice squad by way of a tryout at rookie minicamp. Laquon Treadwell, Once Upon a Time, who we saw last week at Roy Robertson Harris's Inspiring Greatness Foundation golf outing, resurrected his career mm-hmm. with a tryout at the Jaguars rookie minicamp in 2021. And so it's not to say that whether it's here and, you know, whether it's here or elsewhere, I think is the question. But there is certainly a track record mm-hmm. that if Jarvis Landry is trying to get back in the league, he can do so by performing well next, you know, at the rookie minicamp.
Yeah. And I think, too, guys like this, like a veteran guy like Jarvis, who's obviously played Miami, Cleveland, and the Saints, it's good to have those type of guys at a camp like that, too, because a guy like Brian Thomas, who is now trying to come into the league, and maybe you're not looking at, like I said, he missed a year, but leadership-wise and just, like, his experience in the NFL after all of these years, those things help these young guys, especially right away going into camp.
Yeah, certainly. And he went to LSU.
Yeah.
And so Duval Rouge.
It's funny because, like, so I saw real behind the curtain here. I saw Taylor's text of, hey, Jarvis Landry, and I had just finished my run. And I looked at Kevin and I'm like, okay, like how? And he's like, well, LSU. And I was like, yes, that makes sense. But then I realized Ryan Nielsen and Chris Richard were also both on staff for the Saints.
Yeah,
speaking
yeah, yeah.
of. The state of Louisiana when Jarvis Landry was a member of the Saints. And so I'm wondering if that's the connection or if it's just a matter of, you know,
like, are you an LSU
Tiger? If his agent and Trent decided, hey, you know, why not kick the tires? Look, John Ross was selected in the top 10 of what draft? What was it? 2013?
Mm-hmm.
When was John Ross? He's got a tryout with the Eagles this weekend. So, I mean, let's be real. If John Ross, who's, no, actually he's 28.
2017.
Okay, 27. It was 27. Wow, it feels a lot longer than that. He's been out of the league, though, a lot longer than Jarvis Landry's been out of the league. And if he's getting a tryout with the Eagles, why not kick the tires on Jarvis
Landry? Look, we've had worse experimental things when it comes to maybe guys like Tim Tebow.
I was going to say, I know she's about
to go. Even honestly, Carlos Hyde, I hated that the moment it happened, and it just was terrible the whole season. And so at least this, I feel like, is better than that.
Yeah, it's also funny to me that last year after training camp, what were we all arguing about? The receiving position, mm-hmm. the receiver core, the wide receiver core, as far as who was going to make the 53.
Yeah.
Because we thought we had
so many. And how many were they going to keep?
Yes, yeah. How many are they going to keep?
They're all going to get picked up on waivers.
Right. And at the end of the day, Elijah Cooks did appear in some games, but none of those guys that we all argued about for so long did anything, really. And so.
Well, so help us, guys. Help.
So, yeah, we shall see what happens. I'm excited about rookie minicamp, obviously, now that we know who's going to be there as far as the Jaguars are concerned. And, by the way, speaking of LSU, we will have Matt Moscona from ESPN Baton Rouge and all over the state of Louisiana join us tomorrow at 12:30. We've talked to him, obviously, once before the draft at the Guggen 2 weeks ago now, but want to really dive into all three of the LSU players between Brian Thomas Jr., Mason Smith, and Jordan Jefferson. How many people, by the way, are going to call him Justin Jefferson on accident?
Oh, in my head, I've already messed up so many times.
It is Jordan Jefferson. All right, so let's get it to The Athletic, and they had the beat writers select mm-hmm. Taylor, their favorite pick for each team. As I went through it, I was kind of laughing like, well, of course, a lot of these are the first round draft picks. Yeah. That's going to be most beat writers' favorite selection. So, of course, for the Jaguars, it is Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver.
Which I think, of course, that makes sense. But like I said also earlier, most people had Brian Thomas going in the top 20. So you get him a little later than that, and it looks good. You also get draft capital back and getting the guy that you say you already wanted anyways with 17. So all of it checks all those boxes of a successful pick, honestly.
Yes, certainly. And then when it came to the Texans, they had one that surprised me. That was not the first round pick. They had Cade Stover, the Ohio State tight end.
Yeah, because logic suggests he was a dependable safety valve for C.J. Stroud in college. You reunite the two. I know he was a guy, and Nate Tice of The Athletic was saying this on their podcast, that if he ended up in the wrong situation, he's probably out of the league in two or 3 years. But because he is reunited with somebody who he had so much success with a team that is trying to run the ball more, trying to be more physical as opposed to the air raid show that they put on last year, that's where it's a good pick. And they also didn't have a whole heck of a lot of depth behind Dalton Schultz at the tight end position. And so logical move for for Nick Caserio to say, let me get another one of CJ's friends here who also helps set his position of need. Let's go back, though, because we ran through the Colts draft, Lauren, but I do want to talk a little bit about the Texans and the Titans as well.
Sure, yeah.
So the Titans definitely from a philosophical perspective.
Yeah, the Texans got in the first round Kamari Lassiter, the Georgia cornerback. Then they went with the guy that you mentioned on Friday as far as Jaguars had gone after offensive line in the second round with Notre Dame tackle Blake Fisher. And then also they got USC safety Kalen Bullock. And then, like I said, Cade Stover. I'm not going to go through every single pick that they made, the tight end out of Ohio State. I think their draft is good, but I think everyone's going to compare their draft to last year's draft.
So, and I feel like I apologize to you Georgia Bulldogs who are driving around right now. And one of them who's sitting in the studio with us and John O'Leary. Like, I look at Kamari Lassiter and I believe he could play outside. But I know there's a lot of NFL scouts that believe he's just a pure nickel.
Yeah.
And so let's go back.
Because he didn't run very fast.
Correct. Yeah, so let's go back to the Jerrion Jones conversation. Let's go back to Mike Samardzija, who was picked after Kamari Lassiter, by the way. This conversation of can you take a nickel in the second or third round who is exclusively a nickel? I thought Mikey Samardzija was one of the best overall players in this NFL draft.
And a lot of people thought that, too.
Correct. But, again, limited in his position. If Kamari Lassiter can really only be a nickel corner, and you look at the Texans' cornerback depth right now, you have Desmond King, who actually, honestly, is probably the comp for Lassiter coming out of school, having covered him when I was covering the University of Iowa, because he was extremely dependable on the boundary in college, gets to the NFL, ends up falling to day three. The Chargers really found that he could really only be a nickel corner and a return man, which is what he's largely been in Houston. And then the Texans go out and, speaking of the 2020 NFL draft, sign Jeff Okuda and C.J. Henderson, the old friend alert, in free agency. And then outside of Derek Stingley Jr., that is their cornerback room right now. And so I think as much as so many Jaguar fans are criticizing Trent Baalke for not going out and selecting a corner to be opposite Tyson Campbell, you could make the argument that the Texans largely punted on that cornerback position opposite Derek Stingley Jr. too.
Yeah, I think that most people had Lassiter just ranked so high that that's why they would forgive a pick like that, because for most people, he was in the top 5-6 corners in the draft. And obviously, we knew Quinyon and Terrion and Cooper DeJean were the three, like, pretty much consensus that were going to go Kool-Aid and Nate kind of behind that, and he was right in that group behind those guys.
Yeah, and again, they'll always forgive if it's a player that comes from a school that had an elite, whether it's offense or defense. Yeah, they're like, oh, well, Georgia's defense is always good. It's Kirby Smart. It's Georgia. Absolutely. And, yeah, I think Kamari Lassiter is going to be a good player in the NFL. It's just the lack of speed is what's going to hurt him. And it's what did hurt him as far as what some people thought. All right, and then the Titans drafted Alabama offensive lineman J.C. Latham, who I heard XL Primetime on Friday talking about him. And Leon Searcy said, obviously former All-Pro lineman, said that he is not a tackle. Like, not a tackle
some
in the NFL.
Some people believe that.
I've heard that people love J.C. Latham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
people
so
did.
The Chargers were
so
talking about taking him in the top five.
Correct,
right.
Exactly. So to me, he's going to be a fascinating case study to see just how well he performs to protect Will Levis.
Well, if there's anybody that they can throw him to and say, figure it out, it's Bill Callahan.
Yeah.
So I come away from this saying, knowing that there was...
The son of the head coach.
Correct. Is this the first... I heard some people say this. Is this the first time that the father of the head coach has made a choice for a first round draft pick in the history of the NFL? You could argue yes.
Probably.
A lot of scouts, a lot of coaches very high on J.C. Latham and what he could be. But again, kind of like with Kamari Lassiter in Houston, you have this gaping hole at left tackle. It has been a revolving door. It has quite literally been a garbage can that just keeps getting knocked over for the Tennessee Titans for the last 2 to 3 seasons. And you select a guy who projects as either a right tackle or a guard. Could he play left tackle? There's the belief that because he is this raw ball of clay that perhaps he could develop into that. But the surefire thing is right tackle, or guard. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, maybe you fix a smaller problem, but you still had Nick Petit-Ferrer, who you drafted in the third round last year, who was going to be your right tackle for you if he's eligible to play, because I know he was suspended part of last year. And so... maybe you made that a strength, but you still have a gaping hole at the bigger problem. And so that's where I find it fascinating. But I will tell you, as much as we may not agree with it, there were a lot of offensive-minded people that were very high on this kid.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly think that he is the left tackle, because I feel like that's why they believe that's their left tackle.
Yeah, certainly they drafted him 7th overall.
Like the Carolina Panthers thought Ike Ekwonu would be their left tackle. Mm-hmm. The New York Jets thought Mekhi Becton would be their left tackle. And how'd that work out for them?
Yeah.
And so
I remember seeing Becton at the combine and thinking, that guy doesn't look like a starting tackle in the NFL.
And at least
I think all of Latham's starts were at right, too.
They were.
So that's just like that's definitely going to be an interesting.
Right. It's one thing when Anton.
They saw something they think he can do.
Right. When Anton has only played left tackle and you move him to right, it's very different when they've only played right tackle and you move him to left. Again, I didn't play offensive line, so Leon Searcy, 2-4. Right. Exactly. 5'2". I'm so surprised. Although we did relive in the media room last week during the draft, Powder Puff, Friel Township High School. I had to be the center because for Powder Puff football, the center was the one who actually called the plays, dictated by whatever the defense was. And because I was the only girl who understood reading coverage, they were like, you have to be center. I'm like, I want to be a slot receiver. And they were like,
nope.
Nah, dog. Like, you're playing center. So I did play offensive line once.
The Texans also got Tavondre Sweat in the second round.
Yes.
Or sorry, thank you. The Titans got Tavondre Sweat. And I do think that's a good pick where they got him. He fell a little bit, obviously, because like we've discussed the incident he had with DWI.
Here's the thing, though. The Titans, Amy Strunk, their controlling owner, they get rid of Mike Vrabel and say they want a different identity. They want to start fresh, look at things a different way with Rand Carthen and now a new Brian Callahan and a new regime. Isn't this the same owner and the same franchise that selected, Isaiah Wilson. I got the two confused. Isaiah Wilson, who never played a down in the National Football League. Caleb Farley, who was a walking medical red flag and has largely not played in the National Football League. And certainly, yes, they swung on Jeffrey Simmons, who had question marks as well coming through the draft process, and it hit. Mm-hmm. And so I guess going 1-for-3, the prospect of going 1-for-3 on those question marks in the first and second round, it keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah.
And I respect the Titans that they went out to Texas. They met with Tavondre Sweat's family. Shout out to Nicole Lynn, his agent, that set that up. But I just, philosophically, and Tavondre Sweat may be a good player. I'm not sure he could play all three downs, but he may be a good player and may be crucial to their success or, lack thereof. But I just can't come away from, we got rid of Mike Vrabel. Mm-hmm. We're going to be different than what we've been the last 6-7 years. And you went right back. Went right back to picking up question marks.
I think they're looking at it and they're like, this guy's slipping. And this is a guy that a lot of people had, easy in the first round for a lot of people. And they slowly started
people
going.
People had mocked him to the Jags way back
before
the incident.
And then obviously that happened. And what I've the people I have talked to from Texas, like this is this was his issue. There were not other issues. So that's the thing when maybe more teams will. Don't be dumb. Like, don't drive drunk. That's one of
the
things.
You are going to Nashville.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
you can
one
walk.
Thing.
You can walk on Broadway.
It's not, it's not Greenway.
You can walk on Broadway. Yeah.
You're going to have
to. And also, there were scouts that said that there were concerns in meeting with Sweat because he referenced how his maturity is there now, but it wasn't there in the early part of his college career, which, by the way, George Kittle said the same thing in his interviews, slid to the 5th round, turned out okay for him.
Yeah.
But he said that he used to party way too much his first few years of college, but he's matured, he's turned it around, and then 2 weeks later he gets a DUI.
Yeah. Well, and I don't ever want to laugh at, that. Obviously, don't drink and drive. Yeah. There are so many reasons as why not to. But we are talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds when we're evaluating them.
Who, by the way, are given a lot of money now.
Who nowadays, are given expensive cars and a lot of money to be able to party and all those things. And so I do think, given the right situation, they can grow up so quickly.
Yeah.
But there are other guys that don't learn their lesson. And we see a Henry Ruggs who had the massive issue. And so I do think it's smart to dive deeper into things like that. By the way, before we go to break, The Athletic for the Colts, so their beat writer selected Latu as their favorite player, makes sense, our favorite pick, and then the Titans, J.C. Latham, theirs. So like I said, most of them, at least for the AFC South, 3 out of 4 were the first round pick, no surprise there. All right, when we come back, we're going to keep it on the draft and a whole lot more. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust. Helmets and Heels. This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
So when I growing up, I was a big Maurice Jones-Drew guy. Like I was a super fan of him, and I watched just about, I think, every game that he played, and when Jalen went there from Florida State, like, I was tuned in to every game, him playing inside, outside, just the way he brought, like, what he brought to the game. And, you know, I kind of fell in love with the Jaguars while Jalen was there, and especially while Maurice Jones Drew was there, you know. So just now me being able to continue that Florida State pipeline and come in and make plays and do what I do best, you know, it's a blessing, man.
You're listening to Helmets and Heels.
Illuminated by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010XL.
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, as Jarian Jones was saying that Friday night, that Lauren Brooks was that Chris Farley meme where, like, you start out so happy as he's talking about MJD, and then he starts talking about Jalen, and you just slowly bring your face down to a frown.
Well, in all reality, I thought Jalen Ramsey was a fantastic cornerback when he was here. Mm-hmm. I just am among the people that cannot stand someone who lies, and I felt like he lied to an entire fan base and to the organization, and so he turned his back on his teammates and this franchise. And to me, that is something that I shouldn't say forgive him, because he doesn't need my forgiveness. It's just why, yes, I soured on him as a person. And certainly as a football player, but he'll probably be in the Hall of Fame one day, and that's fine. But yes, MJD, I loved when Jarian Jones was talking about him, and for everybody who was a Jaguars fan at that point in time, you knew when MJD got the ball, he was going to truck someone, including certainly Sean Merriman. Mia, as far as the undrafted free agents that the Jaguars rounded up, it looks like they got some pretty good ones.
Yeah, I'm going to run through the list so far. Shout out to Gus and the team at Big Cat Country for putting together this undrafted free agent tracker, and then we'll kind of dive into some of these names. I've seen some of you on the MyBookie Digital Studio YouTube chat line that are really intrigued by a couple of them, and we can certainly dive into them. Albany wide receiver Brevin Esten, that's Albany State, as in where Jared Verse began his career. App State linebacker Andrew Parker, Oregon offensive lineman Stephen Jones, Mount Union wide receiver Wayne Ruby, Western Carolina wide receiver David White, Villanova running back Jalen Jackson, Indiana edge rusher Andre Carter, Akron and former Miami and Florida running back Lorenzo Lingard.
Oh, yeah.
Ohio State defensive back Josh Proctor, Memphis wide receiver Joseph Skates, and UTSA wide receiver Josh Cephas. I got a lot of feedback. Up until this morning, I just got one text about David White, the Western Carolina wide receiver, a Jacksonville native, of course. People, as much as they may not have been as high on the Jags draft class nationally, as is tradition, very high on the undrafted free agent haul that Tony Khan and company were able to bring in. What I found interesting, big picture here, before we dive into some of the specific names, from what I was told, Tony was really, when he first set out, you know, with his team and the analytics squad and the rest of the front office and the personnel staff here in Jacksonville, they were targeting a lot of edge rushers and a lot of pass rushers. And Andre Carter really was the only one that they came away with. And I believe he only had, I think it was like 3 sacks last year. And so certainly they could have targeted guys who went somewhere else. But I did find it interesting that the haul, from what we know so far, because the official list has yet to actually come out, it's a lot of guys on offense, and certainly a lot of wide receivers. I've seen several of you on the text line, Design My Lifetime Enclosures, asking about why are there so many wide receivers. That's by design. Mm-hmm. It's camp. You need to have some bodies out there to be running around, be catching passes from Mac Jones and CJ Beathard and whatever camp arm they end up bringing in, because they will have to bring in somebody on a tryout.
It won't be Nathan Roy, veteran. Much to everyone's dismay.
Well, never say never, Lauren.
The Patriots did get Joe Milton.
They have like six quarterbacks. They have like six quarterbacks up there. They got to get rid of some of them.
That's true. Could be Nathan Rourke.
Maybe
again.
He loves living in Jacksonville. Maybe he makes his way back down here, if only for training camp. Before we go into the wide receivers, because there are some crazy stories there. I already alluded to David White, who, by the way, our good friend Ty Dunn at GoLongTD.com did a great profile on him. So make sure you go check that out, and I'll tweet it out as well. Stephen Jones, the Oregon offensive lineman, as of now, the only offensive lineman that we have seen among the undrafted free agents to reportedly sign with the Jaguars, was very much a target of the Jaguars. He's a guy who, if you go back and you look at the tape from the Ducks' great 2023 campaign, yes, you will see Jackson Powers Johnson in the middle, but you also see this guy who has played tackle. He's played on the inside. He is a behemoth, an absolute behemoth of a man. I mean, he is an athletic refrigerator, for lack of a better term. Sure, his testing numbers were not necessarily what, you know, would eye-popping say to you, like, oh, he's running like a 4.8 at 360 pounds. But that is definitely a name that I have been hearing for quite some time now. And again, he was all Pac-12 in his final season. And you cannot deny, yes, 6'3", 315 pounds, maybe even bigger by the time he gets to Jacksonville for rookie minicamp.
They only allowed 5 sacks last year, by the way.
Yeah, all as year. A unit. As a unit.
Yeah. Right. That's insane. Yes.
I would expect more offensive linemen to be added to the undrafted free agent list. What's hard for this group of guys, not all of them, but for the most part, they're going to work out in Jacksonville, but they probably won't end up here. Mm-hmm. And so they, yes, while they move here for now, they then still have to keep an eye on, and with certainly talking to their agent, where they will end up post training camp.
Yes. So that is a name, though, that especially, you know, when we look at the fallout from the 2024 draft, where the Jaguars stand in terms of numbers for a 53-man roster that'll have to be trimmed down by September or late August, I guess I should say. One of my biggest questions, and I alluded to it in the 12 o'clock hour, are the Jaguars done? Could there be trades made? Could there be additional veteran free agents who are signed? I think that, and we'll get to the Marshawn Lattimore theory, I think, in our final segment, because I do want to make sure we throw that out into the ether, because I think there is a reality where that exists, even if it's only pure speculation at this point. The Jaguars did receive offers and did have communication with teams for Cam Robinson last week. They don't want to part with him. I'll tell you that. Like they are very happy with their offensive line room. After essentially, yes, we know, Taylor. After essentially, you know, the trauma of losing so many guys to various injuries, which happens to every team, but for the Jaguars last year, this iteration, this group under Doug Peterson, it was the first time that this young group really suffered so many different injuries, and it forced them to shuffle things in a way that maybe they weren't expecting. They're going to do everything they can to have Cam Robinson on the roster, to have Zay Jones on the roster. But if fourth-rounder Javon Foster looks like he's ready to be your swing tackle, Walker Little scheduled to make $20 million less than Cam Robinson. He proved to you in the playoff run in 2022 what he can do. Can he not?
And he's played well to start last season.
Mm-hmm. And if you have a vested veteran in Blake Hantz, and let's say Steven Jones is to ball out, does that change your plans? Does that make Cam Robinson and that $22 million number a bit more expendable than it did a few months earlier?
Yeah, I can understand why teams would inquire about Cam, but I still think that for this Jaguars offensive line, they want to have Cam Robinson as the left tackle. That's my belief because of what they think he provides. And again, it's easy in theory to say, okay, well, yeah, we'll just move Anton Harrison to left tackle, we'll let Cam walk or whatever, trade him, and then plug in someone at right tackle. So Trevor now has never worked with Anton as the left tackle, and you're just going to go into the season, and obviously they'll work through from now until the start of the season. But that, to me, is putting more on both of their plates.
Right. And I think that if some of their tackles of choice had been there at 17, at 48, at 96, we'd be having a very different discussion this Monday afternoon. So that's why I expect, as of now, like I expect Cam Robinson to be here when training camp begins in late July. Mm-hmm. But I just can't help but say, look.
They would answer some calls in camp.
Based on numbers and based on what a team may be willing to give up, could that change things? And I think the same can be said, and that is why, you know, there's a lot of smoke about the Jaguars. Maybe they didn't like this class after it got past round 4 or 5 overall for a second straight year. Would they instead say, you know what? We acquired that third-round pick for next year, that fourth-round pick for next year. Can we use that as trade bait and say, go after a Marshawn Lattimore, who's familiar with Ryan Nielsen, familiar with Chris Richard, if we were to go out and get him? And mind you, by the way, like I don't have any intel on this. This is just sheer speculation. Myself and several other Jaguar reporters have talked about it, but no insight as to this being a reality. This is not Brandon Ayuk. I received a call about Brandon Ayuk. This is not Brandon Ayuk. But you tell me, would you have rather reached for an outside corner at 96? Instead, you take your nickel corner, which now that position hopefully is solved with Jarian Jones. But you get that extra third rounder next year. Let's say you float that the Saints way. Or can you do a player for a player trade? Because as much as they just drafted Tyleese Fuaga, they still have a gaping hole at left tackle because Trevor Penning has not lived up to his first round billing. Could the New Orleans Saints be interested? in trading for Cam Robinson. The Washington Commanders, yes, I understand that, you know, that they were able to get Johnny Newton and Mike Samardzija and, of course, Jaden Daniels. That's three top 50 players in the top 50. That's critical. But who's playing left tackle for them?
Yeah.
And so that's where I do think there's a world in which Cam Robinson is traded, and I did want to float that Marshawn Lattimore theory because I do think the Jaguars could be active either at the trade deadline or post June 1st and try to fortify that defensive back room because they have tons of bodies. That's that's not the issue. It's a matter of, yes, Chris Richard, I trust him to develop these young corners. Are they going to be ready to go in September? I'm not so sure.
We've got an Iceman update when we return. One segment to go here on Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels.
This is Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers. Helmets and Heels is brightened by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010 XL.
One segment to go. Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. Taylor Dahl, the Jacksonville Iceman, come back to the First Coast tomorrow night. Puck drops at 7 p.m. And what is on the line?
Yes, yeah, so when and they move on to the next round, lose, and it goes to game seven. Let's just hope for a
dun,
win.
Dun, dun.
I know. Let's just hope for a win because obviously it's nice to knock it out. You get a little bit of extra time in between the two series if you don't go to seven. Also, game sevens are just so stressful in general.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they were able to take two of the ones on the road. Unfortunately, lost 3-1 on Saturday. And then, so, yeah, now 7 o'clock tomorrow with hopes to just move on to round two.
We love it, and certainly I'm sure it's going to be packed.
Yes. Everybody go, because it helps them. Like, that crowd being there, home ice, there's a reason that that's an advantage. So get out there.
Yes, again, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. A couple college baseball notes. JU swept Queens at home, so congrats to the Dolphins as they continue their run as far as this season goes. With Chris Hayes as the head coach. He's just such a great guy, and I'm happy to see them playing well. JU plays host to Bethune-Cookman tomorrow. First pitch is at 7 o'clock. UNF did lose 2 out of 3 to Stetson, but Tony Rocha fired a complete game shutout, and North Florida won 2-0 over Stetson. That was yesterday, so congrats to Tony Rocha for that. UNF plays host to UCF tomorrow night. First pitch at 6 o'clock. And then one shout-out to a team we have not ever talked about here on Helmets and Heels.
Oh.
UNF's beach volleyball team won the A-Sun Championship now advanced to its first-ever National Collegiate Beach Volleyball Championship. They are the 16 seed. They'll play in the opening round against 17th-seeded Chattanooga. That is Friday, May 3rd at 9 a.m. And if they win, then they will take on top-seeded USC in the following round at 1 o'clock that day on Friday. So shout out to them. Yeah.
Yes.
I love to see local teams winning championships. And beach volleyball is something that, had that been something I could aspire to play college beach volleyball, I don't know that I would have been good enough. But I loved volleyball. Mm-hmm. And I never – beach volleyball wasn't a college sport at the time. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't something that I would have been able to do. But, oh, my goodness, so much fun to play.
Yes, absolutely. And it's cool because – beach volleyball really only got started in the A-Sun and at UNF a few short years ago. So I have some friends that played on the indoor volleyball team for UNF, and now they find themselves, they're rooting for both squads. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. 318 on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures, before we go, has quickly become one of our go-to Heeligans. We call him the quality text guy around 1010XL because he has some great stats and facts. Wants to know why I didn't talk about Steve today. Not Steve, our boss here at 1010XL. Steve, Caitlin Clark's bodyguard. Is he an ex-special forces, a former MMA fighter? Does he have ties to the mob? I thought Mia would address this. I honestly was so locked in on the draft that I did not know about Steve.
Oh.
I know that our younger interns here were quick to alert Taylor and I that a video got leaked, a not-so-nice video got leaked of Caitlin Clark last week. And that was the last Caitlin Clark news I have seen outside of she's just draining threes at the Fever's training camp. So I'm going to have to do some more intel, 318, on Steve the bodyguard, because this sounds like maybe the next great X-Files music, QS, RJ investigation that I have to look into.
All right, so tomorrow, Matt Moscona from ESPN's Baton Rouge will join us at 12:30 to talk all about those LSU players. And on Wednesday, the wonderful Alyssa Lang from SEC Network will join us on certainly the Jags players that were drafted from the SEC, some college football talk, and some women's basketball talk as well. That is going to do it for us today. We appreciate all of our 1010XL listeners, like you said, on the text line Design My Lifetime Enclosures, as well as the YouTube chat line in the MyBookie Digital Studio. For me, O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. Of course, don't go anywhere. XL Primetime comes up next, but these heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow. You keep